positive or otherwise.
Yeah, we're gonna regret that one later, but he's right.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Crime Pop. This is the podcast where we talk about fictional crime as if it were real. My name is Sydney Bowman. I'm joined with Trevor Lister.
Hi there.
And Jeff Weirich.
Aloha.
Are you going to say that every time now, Jeff? All right, awesome. It's Jeff's turn. What do you got for us this week, Jeff?
Oh boy, okay. This week, I'm going to cover the career, but specifically the main crime committed by Lord Farquaad from the movie Shrek. Both of you, I assume, are familiar.
Yeah. My favorite movie, maybe, of all times.
Wow.
Is his crime his outfit or his hair, Jeff?
Got him. Slam dunk. No, actually, it is not either of those things that you said, you silly bastard. The main crime that sparks the initial plot advancement of the film is Lord Farquaad doing a mass forced displacement over fairy tale creatures in his kingdom or his lordship. What's up?
Nope, sorry, go ahead.
What'd you say?
I was going to say, I really like this because it's something that we've talked about in other episodes, but I'm hoping you'll shed some more specific light on real world things about it.
Yeah, so forced displacement obviously is a thing that exists and is very well documented in the real world. It happens in a lot more of a... not comical, but it's portrayed very differently in Shrek than it happens in real life, just because it is a kid's movie and it can't be as graphic as it got in real life. But just to go down a list of things that we know that Farquaad does in his tyrannical lordship, aside from forced displacement, is things he promotes are mob justice, bounties, something called a designated resettlement facility, which is, essentially
a concentration camp.
concentration camp, like a pinpointed spot surrounded by fences. Torture, we see him do with Gingy.
Aww.
And something else that's rampant in his area is vigilante justice, which we see with the Merry Men.
Wait.
So to go through...
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Pause. The Merry Men were directly under Farquaad?
Yeah, that's in his... That's under his... The reign of Duloc.
Oh, sorry. Oh, right, of course, sorry. Right, of course, it couldn't be through him.
They weren't, hired by him, but it was his
right. Place. Right, sorry. That wouldn't make sense, but yeah.
Yeah, that shit wouldn't fly in far, far away, you know?
Right.
But to go through how we see it happen, there's a reward put up for fairy tale creatures, which is essentially a species of beings that's not a human, or anything that's sentient that's not a human. It could be a fairy tale creature, and they're not to to draw comparisons to real life things, they're paying people to turn in fairy tale creatures. And the government is very much pressuring its citizens to turn in these fairy tale creatures. Not incredibly unlike Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Where people were very... Everything
you were saying, I was Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. And that's to say, it's not as dark as the Holocaust gets. I mean, at least with forced displacement under Farquaad, it's not mass executions happening. But I mean, you see them in small cages, being loaded up on a cart and shipped away. You see you see Pinocchio's owner selling him. You see Donkey's owner selling him. Clearly, this decree by Farquaad has some pretty powerful backing. Otherwise, people wouldn't be doing it. It could also be because he keeps his people so poor. They're not paying mountains of gold for these things. They're paying very meager amounts, but these people are all very inclined to turn it in. Could be that, and that's not like an unknown tactic. And, you know, keep your people poor so that they'll do anything for money or food when they need to. You know, Les Miserables touches on that quite a bit. So we see them doing that. We see in terms of the mob justice, we see a group of people going after Shrek at the beginning with pitchforks and torches to kill him because he's wanted for being a big, scary fairy tale creature. He, of course, is not fazed by this. He's a giant ogre. They're just tiny little men. And he scares them away. But even to the point when Donkey escapes
his predicament.
His predicament, sure, there you go. And he runs into Shrek, the guard's still like under Lord Farquaad. I mean, he's obviously like tremoring and scared, but, like, under decree of Lord Farquaad, you need to come in and turn yourself in. Which, of course, he refuses, and I'm sure that's the reason why they dump all the fairy tale creatures there, is because Shrek is the one thing they won't be able to make move, so let's just put them all there since he's already there. But yeah, so that's something that Farquaad is doing, and lordships as a whole can be kind of vague. Depending what era and what country, lordships and barons have wildly different levels of responsibility. Like, a lot of time they're just kind of like meant to keep peace and money circulation going through. I don't quite know why Farquaad had as much power as he did, but we do learn that for him to be a king, he needs to marry princess and essentially garner into royalty, which leads me to believe that Duloc is not something under Far Far Away, which is a kingdom. It's probably something under a king that or a royalty that no longer exists. Because if his title is currently lord, and he could become king just by being attached to some royalty, he's probably the only standing governmental figure in that area.
I never thought about that.
Yeah,
that doesn't really make sense.
No, it doesn't. Because if he's the only thing there, anyways, why isn't he just like the only person who said he's not king is the magic mirror? And I mean, I'm sure they had a hammer somewhere there, right? Like, why not just smash the fucking, who gives a fuck? Because he's not under control of anybody else. Like, we know that Far Far Away doesn't control them, and we never hear of another king. And if he's a part of another kingdom, how would him marrying a princess make him king? That would make his stateship de facto from the overall kingdom.
They should have named him Prince Farquaad. That would have made perfect sense. Come on, DreamWorks.
Amateurs.
So, from what I understand about fealties, there was a time when, so, for example, with Spain, right? You have several areas just like what we kind of see depicted here, right? One leader over a very vast area. And then once you get outside of that vast area, you get into the next area, like, which is really, really far away. You have like a similar setup. And these people were connected by a network, basically saying, we promise that we won't fight each other and everything's going to be cool. But like, they're still not exactly enemies, not exactly anything, you know? So, in these situations, there is usually like whoever is the most powerful leader in this whole situation, right? Like, say there are like five different lordships around. Well, one of those can be the king of all of them if they are powerful enough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously historically correct and fair. I think it would make more sense if he was actually powerful enough to try to take over neighboring things. Like, if he was like, I need to marry someone with a strong army, that would be different, right? But,
I like how you said obviously correct. Thank you, Jeff. I am obviously correct.
I mean, it is 100%
correct. Accurate. No historians that listen to this, don't anybody dare comment and correct what I just said.
Yeah, has nothing. So the closest thing, I did just the smallest amount of digging. The closest thing historically that I could find that were related to this was a guy named Gaius Varius, who was a proprietor in Rome. And like that's like someone who governs in the stead of an emperor in a location that's far out. And he's over Sicily, though it wasn't called Sicily at the time. I don't know what it was, but like he essentially decides that he's in charge, and he takes everything, disrupts everything, unroots everything, builds his own army out of pirates. He doesn't marry someone to become emperor, but that was the closest thing of like someone given something similar to lordship and trying to make it their own thing.
It's a nice little story.
So yeah, so thanks. So the next thing after we see all this and we learn all this that we see him do in well practice is torture. And we've talked about torture on the show before, but like, I mean, he's doing it himself. Farquaad's getting in there, snapping off Gingy's little legs.
Poor Gingy.
Dunking them in milk. It's a dark scene. This movie is very adult.
Yes.
Especially compared to what the sequels do, but like, recently rewatched this movie for this episode, and it's got some pretty heavy mature tones throughout. Next thing he does is set up a tournament to find his champion who will go rescue the princess that he needs to become a king and start his kingdom.
When he should be doing it himself.
He should, but he's obviously, you know, chicken shit guy. Can't do anything.
And really, how fast can you run with those little legs?
That's true. That's true. I got him again. Slam dunk.
Slam dunk him. Whoa.
Duncan. This episode's going to be called Duncan on Farquaad.
Nice.
Something that is very clear in this society is that while these fairy tale creatures are very clearly sentient, they are also very clearly subhuman. Like, very subhuman. They're not quite treated. They're not really treated as slaves. They're more of just treated as a burden. Like, they don't ever use them. They just want rid of them. But when Shrek strolls up on Farquaad in Duloc to tell Farquaad to get the fairy tale creatures off of his land, he tells his knights to try to kill him. Winner is the winner. You know, or whoever does the final blow wins the tournament. Shrek, of course, wins all this.
I just definitely wanted to highlight, he wins it like WWE style. Like, there's a ring.
Oh, yeah. It's the best scene in the movie. Like, one of the best parts of this entire ordeal is when he's in the ring fighting, you hear an old woman from the crowd yelling, "The chair! Give him the chair!" And he picks up a folding chair and hits a knight. It's so nonsensical. So Shrek is sent to rescue Fiona. Gets Fiona, comes back, and then Farquaad imposes upon her. For some reason, Fiona treats it as willing for a while, but not at the end. But the whole time is a forced marriage, which is not incredibly uncommon in that time. You know, I don't know what time period this takes place, but like in history, forced marriages or arranged marriages are not an uncommon thing. But he does this. He like makes the marriage happen once Fiona's an ogre, and then tells the guards to lock him in the dungeon because all he cares about is being king. He actually says a line here as the guards are like dragging them all away. Farquaad looks at Shrek and says that he'll make him beg for death to save you.
Damn.
That's so extreme. It's such a dark moment. And then a dragon bursts through and eats Farquaad alive. Oh, God.
Oh, that did what happen, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. Farquaad dies via dragon mouth.
Man, guys, the early 2000s were, like, they feel like the wild, wild west.
Yeah, especially in film. So a couple things that I did research to address because I wasn't super sure how it would take place. And just a spoiler warning, a lot of the answers are, it's a fantasy movie, so it doesn't make any sense. But I wanted, kind of like with talking about the lordship and proprietary, I wanted to try to relate it to the real world as much as possible. So, the deal Shrek makes with Farquaad is that if he rescues Fiona, he can have the deed to his swamp. And for some reason, it's like a physical deed, like it's a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. So I was curious as to how Farquaad has the rights to that and who would honor the deed. And a lot of what I found was like that all runs through him. Like if it's a property in his area of lordship, then that's essentially an honor rule for him. But since Shrek didn't own the deed, I guess, since he got it from Farquaad, since Shrek didn't own the deed originally, he was technically a squatter there. In which case, he really had no rights to ask for it back because he was never in ownership. At that time, there was no such thing as squatter's rights.
True.
That said, if it was not under his and they drew a line around it, adding to it, it would essentially be the same thing as the deed that it would run through him. Like, there's no way Shrek would have managed to take it up to the kingdom level. It just, especially if, you know, the story that I'm telling, which the kingdom doesn't exist, then that was all going through Farquaad, you know? So I don't really know. That would have just had to have been an honor system. But to Farquaad's credit, the fairy tale creatures do leave the swamp. I don't know where they go. They're probably, I mean, again, for the forced displacement thing, they're just forcefully relocated and forced to immigrate somewhere else. But he does honor his end of the deal. The squatters of the fairy tale creatures do leave. Something else that I thought was an interesting parallel in this episode is that, or in the film, is that Shrek talks about wanting to build a 10-foot wall around his property to keep outsiders out, which, you know, obviously has its relations to the real world with wanting to build a wall around the country to keep outsiders out. But it's interesting to compare Farquaad to Shrek in that what they wanted originally, like at the start of the movie, what they want is not entirely different. At least with like word for word, they both don't want fairy tale creatures on their property. Farquaad wants them gone, Shrek wants them gone. I mean, even like Farquaad of wanting no outsiders in his area, outsiders being people he doesn't deem as sentient humans, Shrek doesn't want that either. He's just not quite as tyrannical about how he wants it done. I mean, like, it's not like Shrek starts snapping necks and popping heads off to get the fairy tale creatures off. Like, he tries to do it due process-wise. Like, he goes to the lordship and asks permission.
No, and he is more than capable of just...
Oh, yeah.
...wrecking through everything. But, yeah, he takes the lawful route, and he tries.
Which is not out of Shrek's character. Like, he's definitely a chaotic good kind of guy. Like, we don't ever see him murder a bunch of humans. And we even hear him talk about how he doesn't like that people think that that's what he is. So I think that was pretty in line for Shrek's character to do that. And so something that's frowned upon, that I kind of went through common practice, something that was frowned upon that I think also has real world connections is interspecies relationships. Like, donkey and dragon. Donkey talks about how it's weird, like when he's there, like, obviously we can't be together, you know, you're a big dragon, I'm a little donkey. We know that, I mean, at least from Farquaad's standpoint, ogre and human with Shrek and Fiona is an absurd topic, or absurd proposition. Like, that couldn't ever happen. Not unlike interracial relationships, for example, here in America in the last century, you know, has certainly been a problem with the racist people. I mean, I don't know why I'm trying to sugarcoat calling people racist. But,
it's like a little bit racist.
I mean, you know, it's but that's what this is, you know, like, this is just so I don't have to say speciesism over and over again. I mean, the story in Shrek is racism. You know, it's Farquaad wanting these things that aren't like him off of. Out of the kingdom. And the idea of a fairy tale.
What was that called?
Forced displacement?
No.
Trail of Tears.
Dip and Dots?
In Nazi Germany, where they would, like, kill people that didn't have blonde hair, blue eyes.
Genocide?
Holocaust? Genocide?
No.
Decimation?
The final solution?
Oh boy. Hang on. That was a joke, by the way, everybody.
Racial ideology?
No.
No?
I don't like the different ones, so get them out of here.
Oh, eugenics?
Yes.
Okay.
Eugenics.
That's Eugenic, yeah. So yes. So that's like a big historical term of like, but that's absolutely right. It's eugenics.
Yes. I wasn't saying it was only Nazi Germany, but
I'll cut out the silences we had in there. But yeah, that's absolutely what it is. It's eugenics. Like the humans who are the correct people in Farquaad's eyes don't marry the incorrect people who are fairy tale creatures.
Right.
And that's what Nazi Germany was. That's what America was when it had racial issues, early 20th century and before that, obviously. And you know, in a lot of parts of the country, that you still see that here, of racism, you know. I don't know what I was trying to say there, but you still see that a lot. But that's what we're seeing in Shrek with this Farquaad shit. But we see that a lot in Shrek, of that coming up. Of, you know, I don't think any of this is an accident that a lot of this relates back to the real world. I think that a lot of this is meant to be commentary, but it makes it easy to do research on because I know exactly what to look for to talk about Farquaad. So all those crimes. Before I talk about the conclusion, what do you guys think so far?
I like the comparison to Nazi Germany, eugenics, racism. I think when you actually like look at what happens with like Donkey and do you ever figure out what the dragon's name is?
It's Dragon.
I just think it's funny that you know, two things that you wouldn't think would be able to reproduce, at the end of the movie you find out that they absolutely can.
it does happen, which is strange.
I mean, dragons are supposed to be shapeshifters in some mythology,
it's
right?
True. Ooh. Dragons are supposed to be shapeshifters in some mythology, right?
I wonder if donkeys are like descendants of dragons somehow in that.
Oh man. Probably. That's probably it. You're probably right.
Something I didn't initially think about until we started talking about this is just how somebody like Farquaad rises to power, but then like I just immediately answered that by thinking, oh yeah, it's like a lineage thing. Like you don't choose the best leader, you choose the one who's next in line and that can be groomed by previous leaders, I suppose is the idea. And I guess that's all I was thinking, because like maybe that's not all I was thinking. I was also thinking like how fit he is to be a leader. Like, what do you guys think exactly? Like, not in terms of ideology, but in terms of how he was able to actually manage his kingdom.
Yeah. So we don't see a lot of him, of how the kingdom or the lordship stands thanks to him. The reason I brought up the fact that maybe everybody's poor, and that's why they're so willing to share, is because that would be something that he's directly causing. But I don't know. I mean, Duloc, the concrete city itself, certainly looks well funded.
Yeah, it's pristine.
It is pristine. It also looks very North Korea-y, like completely empty and just concrete, and a bunch of propaganda everywhere.
Sorry, Jeff, you're just referencing the interview, right?
What? No.
You know what's really funny, though? You know the part where they go into the city for, like, and it's, like, deserted, right? But they walk up to the little
the kiosk.
The music box thingy, yeah.
Yeah.
That is straight German. Like, looks exactly like what you would see in Germany.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
As someone who's been, like, it's straight from German, like, aesthetic.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it certainly has a lot of ties to Germany. Kind of on to continue your point, Trevor, the final question I wanted to ask was, assuming that the theories that I've presented are correct, in that he doesn't have any kids. Like, he's not a kingdom yet. There's nobody next in line. There's no kingdom above him that can step in. Hmm. He dies at the end.
Ooh.
So what would become of Duloc?
And this is never answered in the movies, right?
They never... They don't. They barely even leave far, far away in all of the other movies.
Being I mean, honest, I would assume that Shrek would take over, but...
Oh, that would be dope.
But clearly that doesn't happen.
No, yeah, because he doesn't care about anything. He just wants, like, he got what he wanted in the end. He got his wonderful wife, which he didn't know he wanted till later. But he got his swamp. That's all he ever asked for. I would assume, since we see the state of things when Shrek and Donkey enter Duloc, I would assume that the whole place just goes to waste and gets deserted, honestly. Which I know, like, sounds kind of weird, but, like, maybe it gets deserted or people just move in without a leader, like, without a head, and then you start getting, like, I don't know, you could go back to one of those groups from The Walking Dead, right? Like, they just make up their own rules, you know? Mm. I think it's probably one or the other, but I don't think that anyone else is going to come in and take this, like, immediately. Like, it'll if anyone takes it, it'll be the people that live in the area.
Yeah, like I said, I think Shrek would take over, like, in my head, I don't know, like, Lord Farquaad was the person who was in charge, and Shrek kind of was the person that took the place, like, took him out and would replace him, like, would be the person to step into that role. But
it's like Viking rules.
Right, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. That if they didn't make a bunch of other movies, I probably would assume the same.
Or if you hadn't seen them go back to the swamp, but I mean, you see that too.
Right, so. That's fair. If there's instances like this in history, it seems to be that either something like a coup would happen where different parties would fight for leadership, assuming that this is wealthy enough to do that. If this was a dying kingdom or a dying lordship that and he needed to be a king to save it, then they probably would migrate elsewhere. Or it'd become a localized thing and just somebody else would take over. Like, you know, kind of like a peaceful coup, you know, like somebody who's already there would rise to head, say, hey, I'm in charge now and things are going to be different.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the first movie, the most organized group that we really see that could potentially take over would be the Merry Men, right?
So the Merry Men seem to be their own thing, and I could totally see them trying to take over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they're the most organized thing that isn't Farquaad and his posse. I mean, they don't do any dance numbers, but... But assuming the Merry Men are... I mean, it's Robin Hood and his group. I don't know how much interest they'd have in being a lord.
Fair enough. Oops.
But that would be a strong contender. I mean, there's probably other people who are in the kingdom who I could see. Like, maybe one of the head knights could attempt to take over. But at that point, I mean, there's not a direct next person in charge unless he decreed one, which we don't see, but is possible.
There's always... the royal family, right? Like Prince Charming, his father.
Yeah, I mean, that would not be much different than them just expanding far, far away and taking over a different thing. Because, again, Duloc isn't under far, far away.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be that they find out about this and send somebody to take control. Which is also totally possible. I mean, you know, I could see that happening. I mean... Maybe a telegram, or not a telegram, but yeah,
maybe.
a message was sent to a neighboring kingdom, being far, far away, and they're like, hey, we don't have anybody running this place. And they're like, all right, no worries, we'll send somebody. And they send a baron, and then now Duloc is under far, far away. Also totally possible.
But yeah, I like that you brought this up, because there's a power vacuum, and they don't like address it at all. So
right, no, not in the slightest of bits.
No, and there are like three other main movies, right? Like, weren't there four movies? And then you had like the Puss in Boots things, and then like Shrek right. on Ice or whatever.
Right.
All kinds of things, right?
Right. And I don't know how much of anything that's not those four movies is canon necessarily. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I didn't look at the plot of Shrek on Ice, so they might have just.
No, Shrek the Musical is a thing, and I have seen it.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Is it terrifying?
The Shrek, he was a big man, by the way. He was a big boy. Yeah. He's to make him look like a giant and everything, he was wearing like blocks on his shoes like this.
Oh, wow.
And the other thing, they actually also like do the origin story of Shrek, like with his parents and everything. You can see little Shrek.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Overall, I think the important parts of like listing all of his crimes of the forced displacement and inciting citizens to carry out his verdict and torture and designated resettlement facilities and eugenics. I mean, it's a lot of Nazi Germany stuff. And I don't necessarily want to imply that I think Farquaad is Hitler level, because he's not. But it's definitely drawing from that. And I think that a lot of his crimes can be focused back to gentrification and forced displacement and anything that stems from that. Thanks for listening. This was fun. Sydney, how'd I do? It's your favorite movie.
I thought you did a great job.
Thanks.
Yay, Jeff.
Awesome job, Jeff. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of Crime Pop. If you like this episode, refer us to a friend, rate us 5 stars on wherever you get your podcast. Feel free to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on Twitter, comment on any episodes that you loved, and just let us know how we're doing, if you're enjoying listening to us. We love hearing feedback, positive or otherwise. I'm Sydney. I've been here with Jeff and Trevor, and we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
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 Bye again.
Bye.